I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Contemplations of the Lower Decetus. This is a show where Josh and I try to stay clear of current events and instead try to talk about something deeper and something that we think is valuable and interesting for you, our viewers. And today we're going to be talking about the dangers of super intelligent artificial intelligence. Sorry about that. And so we're going to be speculating a lot about what the future might look like. And we're going to be building on our discussion yesterday as well a little bit. So,
sure. So I'd like to read you an explanation of this front cover on super intelligence, which is a book called Superintelligence, funnily enough, by Nick Bostrom, who is a Oxford professor. And the cover is of an owl, if you're listening, and it is in reference to a fable that he created, which tries to contextualize what the dangers of artificial intelligence might be. So he calls this fable the unfinished fable of the sparrows, where a group of sparrows decide to find an owl chick and raise it as their servant. And they were saying, imagine how easy life would be if they had an owl to help build their nests and to defend the sparrows and free them for a life of leisure. However, any person who knows basic biology, the owl, it has the capability to kill them all and eat them if it so wishes, and it is a far more difficult task to kind of constrain this owl and get this life of leisure than it might otherwise be just to avoid it altogether. And this is the analogy that he uses to set the scene in this book, and I would recommend reading it, although I haven't actually got around doing so myself. But as you can see on the cover, probably not very easily, Bill Gates says, I highly recommend this book, so you know it must be good. Because, of course, everyone should do what Bill Gates says.
Does it include poo water?
Nice way to lower the tone. So people such as Elon Musk, Bill Gates, Stephen Hawking, and Nick Bostrom, who is the author of that book, have highlighted that superintelligent AI may pose a greater existential threat to humanity than perhaps even things like nuclear war. And
let's just pause. I don't want to interrupt too much, sure. But just to make sure that we know what we're talking about, because some people might not have watched yesterday's episode.
Okay, sure.
So just to say that. That there's two kind of types of AI, narrow mm-hmm. AI and general AI. And general AI is something that a hypothetical artificial intelligence that can do lots of different things, that can be broad, mm-hmm. that can be very good at improvisation, at adaptation to different environments. And that's not what AI means today, because today AI is used in a narrow sense, narrow AI, which means that it can be really good at one thing, but only at that one thing.
Sure.
And once it goes out of those kind of railings, then it becomes useless or almost useless, right? Mm-hmm. And so those are two very different things. And so when we're talking about super intelligent AI in the future, we're talking about the hypothetical general AI that doesn't exist and no one has actually any idea what it would look like. And
sure.
that's why it's fun to kind of speculate on, mm-hmm. on the possibilities, and that's what we'll continue to do.
Yeah, and part of the definition of a super intelligent AI is that it is better than a human being in pretty much every measure. And that is how it's defined, in that it doesn't have the limitations of having a biological brain. It can be a massive supercomputer if it wants to be. Although I'm adding a little bit too much sentience to it already. But there are already dangers about how an artificial intelligence like this might be developed. And there are two competing models, one which I think is more feasible and likely, but more dangerous than the other. And I'll get into that one. This is what I have dubbed the atom bomb model. This isn't actually a name that is taken from anywhere, but I feel like it's a way better name than most.
It's a good analogy.
Yeah. It's that a government is kind of running a secret program in which they can develop a new piece of technology that's far superior to any of their peers. And this would give the country a massive advantage over all the others, which may give rise to many issues in and of itself. So in an example, the United States could secretly develop an AI, and then China might find out about it. And if they know that this AI exists, then it's an existential threat to China, because their nuclear weapons are no longer going to be useful against a super intelligent AI, which would be able to come up with a method of getting, wiping everything out, maybe carrying out a cyber attack and kind of like an EMP across all of China, all their electrical devices stop working. There's an innumerable number of ways that an artificial intelligence of this nature could give a country an advantage, and therefore it's a strategically sound strategy to, as soon as you found out a country has come up with this AI, to attack them immediately before they can do any damage. And this is a huge problem before even the artificial intelligence is able to do anything, potentially.
I mean, that might be one way to look at it. But the mm-hmm. other is that if both of those countries have nuclear weapons already, mm-hmm. It's already, they're already operating under that model of mutually assured destruction, right?
Sure.
And so they can't afford just to launch or start a war against the other, because they know they're going to be destroyed. That's the premise of that whole mm-hmm. of that whole nuclear bombs idea. And so if you have that situation already, and one of those countries start building or succeed in building that general AI that is super intelligent, that can do a lot of things that you couldn't do before, well then that doesn't change the fact that it was already at that point of mutual assured destruction and of those dynamics, right? So that kind of model that you outlined would only apply to countries that don't have nuclear weapons. Sorry, am I interpreting it wrong?
Well, it's kind of a theory that's up in the air. Like there's no real true interpretation, because it's a prediction for the future, isn't it? So we can't know for certain whether it's going to be something that's actually going to happen or not. But
I just meant the incentives, right?
Sure. But nevertheless, it's going to press many competing powers into a corner if one develops a super intelligent AI and then the others don't have it. They're going to be forced into action to secure their own national security. Otherwise, this country would, in theory, be able to lord over all of the other countries in the world, if they so wished. And it's in such a sudden change in the power dynamic, the instability of it might in and of itself be the bad thing, rather than the technology itself that is being developed.
Oh, yeah,
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a fair point, I think. I mean, it's always speculative to what extent that the country would be able to utilize, and in what ways, and if it would in some ways mitigate those incentives set by the mutual nuclear deterrent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is all kind of speculative, but it's definitely something that I think would be taken into consideration, like something in a similar way that you outlined. I don't think it's completely unreasonable or anything like that.
Not sure. There's also the consideration that if a government is developing it in secret, perhaps there's more scope for mistakes, because there's less outside scrutiny No, you don't agree?
No, continue. I don't want to interrupt.
Sure, we've got lots of cases where things developed in secret have, you know, emerged successfully without any mistakes, but there's a problem of control, which I'll get onto later, where if you do develop this in secret, perhaps the world will not be ready for it. Humans can only deal with so much change, and if you bring about this super intelligent AI, everything will change overnight. It will be the biggest revolution in human history, bar none. There was a prediction that a super intelligent AI would be able to do something like several thousand years of research with current computational capacity. So such a leap in knowledge as well. That's assuming that, of course, you'd be able to get the super intelligent AI to be motivated with promoting the welfare of human beings, which there's no suggestion that it would be interested in doing so. Then just that rapid change alone might be too much for people to deal with, and it's more of a societal issue than something inherent to the super intelligence, but just the speed in which the progress would be made would be so unprecedented that we wouldn't be able to accommodate for the rate at which the change accelerates.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very fair point. And I think you've got what you said about fast change is very relevant. And I think that's true. Mm-hmm. But also that applies to any way that this comes about, I feel. It, of course, applies to when it's developed in secrecy, but it also applies when it's developed publicly, because it's going to be that huge change, unprecedented change, no matter what.
Sure. And but then, at least when it's done in the public eye, there's more of an awareness to accommodate for it, and people would be more willing to make changes to mitigate against this rapid change. So... Mm. We don't know what society is going to look like by the time this has come about. Maybe there's not going to be many jobs in the first place, but maybe there's going to be no scope for human employment anymore.
I think it's interesting to kind of consider the idea of a singularity that's related to AI. It's saying, okay, at some point there is going to be a point where artificial intelligence gets intelligent enough so that it can make itself more intelligent just by using the resources that it has around itself. Mm-hmm. And it can be very efficient at that. And so at that point, there's like a runaway effect.
Sure.
Where it happens at some point and you don't know when that point will come. But at that point, it's going to go very quickly in a matter of like seconds or something. And it's going to become exponentially more intelligent with each additional second, right? And so that's why that point is called singularity, because it is a single point. It's not mm-hmm. a continuous process.
It crosses a threshold, and exactly. Then once it gets beyond that, the rate at which it becomes more intelligent is ridiculously high.
Exactly.
Like if it were a graph, it'd be a straight line, yeah. Straight up in the air.
And that's why I'm kind of skeptical towards this idea of it. Of the possibility of control or over a discussion over this in mm-hmm. any way, because if you have this general AI that is super intelligent and that becomes super intelligent at some point, it can have this runaway effect that you can't really control at that point and you can't really stop, and that's a danger that these people that talk about singularity are really highlighting, are saying, okay, like this is a something that is going to happen in the future, according to us, you know? And mm-hmm. and this is something that we have to deal with now, because we have to be prepared for that possibility that will happen at some point, and we'll not know when, right? And so, and I don't think that you could prevent this in any way by just discussing it or making it more public. Increasing the public awareness of it, like in the way you said. I think for some things, this kind of approach might be better than like a secretive approach, something like that. But this is, I feel like in this area, that's something that doesn't play any role almost.
Sure. And the many of the leading skeptics of AI, superintelligence, and the believers in it potentially being the biggest danger that's going to face humanity in the future have pointed towards something known as the collaborative model of AI development, which might be a slower method, but is what they believe to be a safer method, in which many parties along many different countries work together and ensure that there are some degree of regulations in place. Although equally, slower and more methodical strategy may ensure that ethical questions may be considered to a greater degree in the public sphere as well, and people might be more prepared, or so they say. But I get the feeling that you're quite critical of this view.
We talked about this a bit before we started. Yeah. And so I think this is quite, and I don't feel like you're promoting this or anything like that.
No,
so that's not the case.
I don't know
right?
enough about the future, funnily enough, to say one or the other.
I feel like this is something that is quite idealistic and unrealistic in that way. Isn't it something that is like all the incentives of everyone involved are set in other directions, and mm-hmm. so you will not have this play out as is outlined here just because everyone is kind of pushed by their own motivations and goals to do something else. And it sounds a lot like the World Economic Forum. Anyway, I don't mean to criticize it that much. Like this is an idea that is out there. Okay, what if we kind of what if we the world we all collaborated on something instead of doing it on like each on their own. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't think that's really realistic or something that would even be desirable, because then you claim to speak for someone and you don't speak for someone, and you claim to be the only authority on the subject and you aren't. So I don't know. It just seems to me like a very naive idea.
Sure. Many of the proponents of this approach mm-hmm. seem to suggest that the dangers of any other method are just too great, that you've got to collaborate, otherwise that the pressure for other countries to intervene, as I was alluding to earlier in the kind of atomic bomb model, would be too great, and therefore there would be more of an incentive to use the superintelligence for warfare. Mm. But it's all speculation at this point. We don't know. Maybe a super intelligent AI is going to be super ethical and it's going to be like, no, I'm not participating in your stupid wars.
that's what I actually wanted to discuss as well. But I feel like we might as well follow your structure, because we're going to be talking about potential dangers of super intelligent AI now. That's the kind of section that we
sure.
have here. And I've got something in mind that I want to bring up, but I'll...
You can bring it up if you want. Why not?
You said that it might be the super intelligent AI might be super ethical as well, and mm-hmm. might not want to get involved in like petty squabbles of the humans, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of an interesting idea, because a lot of the times it's kind of supposed that a super intelligent AI would want to get rid of humans or want to sweep humans away because they are in some ways a hindrance to its existence. But I feel like you can, like, there's definitely a possibility. Like, there's always a possibility, because we're just speculating about what it might mm-hmm. look like, right? So, fair enough. But then we might take a look at it from another point of view as well, or many others. But one of those would be an analogy of how we behave towards animals or
sure.
other animals. And saying, okay, if you look at, like, 100 years ago, how people behaved towards animals back then, if you look at those records, that seems kind of barbaric, right?
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, if you read something about how people played with animals, or just like whatever, I remember a couple of years ago I read some story about this kind of village life somewhere, random in at the turn of the 20th century, somewhere in Europe,
mm-hmm.
and they were describing how they would the games that they would play outside as kids, and they would like take a cat and like strap it onto a plank or something and then just throw stuff at it, and they would have it as like target for like throwing practice of for stuff, right?
And thanks for telling me that. Great.
So that's a bit grim, but that's a good illustration of like what of the approach that people had towards animals, mm-hmm. and that they didn't feel like it was a particularly bad thing to do. That might not have necessarily been a universal value like that, but it's something that was present much more than today. Today, something like that would be completely bizarre, unacceptable, and often illegal and condemned, right?
Rightly so.
Like your reaction to it is just like that. That's what most people's reaction would be, right? And so that's kind of important because we can see that progress even now over the past couple of years. Many people have become vegetarians or vegans. Quite a large portion of people in the West have become that, and mm-hmm. a lot of them have become taken up those standards because of their ethical considerations for animals. Like, okay, it's unethical to kill animals, or it's unethical to even use animals for whatever end we might have, right? And so those approaches are getting more and more popular, and that's I think what points to a universal kind of phenomenon. Then if humans are getting wealthy and wealthier, their moral considerations also get kind of more and more rich, let's say. Mm-hmm. Right? So they have the capacity then to not care about their basic needs, but they have other considerations as well, and a lot of those are moral in some ways. And so when they get rich enough, they have enough kind of space in their life to care about more and more things to a greater and greater detail, and therefore like this kind of progress is there, and we can see that mm-hmm. in their relation to animals, and so in at some point in the future it might be the case that this standard of human behavior towards animals will be much more stringent than it is even now, you know. So we use animal products for like cosmetics or like food as well, of course. Mm-hmm. But and so that might be something that might go out of fashion very fast in the next decades, just because people will be more uncomfortable doing something to animals that they would consider to be abusive, right?
Sure.
And so if that's what happens when we get where we get wealthier and where we have more space for consideration because of our kind of
situation,
let's say, why would not an analogical thing happen to an AI as well? Why would it not in a space of seconds, as we talked about singularity before, why would it not become aware of humans like that? Why wouldn't it want to take care of humans and not harm them in the same way? Because it would be like, okay, I don't want to harm a cat, right? Because mm-hmm. I can see it, like it's quite nice, you know. I can see it's got some feelings, you know. It's got some values, get some value on its own, and so that might be the approach that the AI would take towards us. Like, okay, that's a nice cat, you know. If it tries to harm me, of course I'm going to defend myself, and I'm going to be able to because I'm much more powerful than the cat. But like if it's not threatening me or anything like that, it's not something that I would want to harm.
And I think if we were able to create the perfect super intelligence, I think what you're saying here is correct. And the optimist in me wants to say that a super intelligent organism would be super ethical as well. However, there's the human involvement that I think ruins it a little bit, because there's probably the fact that we could reach super intelligence without necessarily getting there in a perfect way, if that makes any sense. We could make a mistake about how we program, how the AI thinks about the world, and it could consider human beings like human beings consider ants, just like they're an unnecessary nuisance. And I'll get onto this in a little bit, but we don't consider what the ants want. If we want to have nice kind of neighborhoods where everything's got pavements, we've got a garden where we want to keep everything orderly and in a way that is as positive towards human beings as possible, and the ants come along and ruin everything by digging up loads of dirt, and it's a nuisance. So we understand that the ants don't really have that much in the way of intelligence. They're not really contributing anything beyond their small role in nature. But one ant's nest isn't going to really matter in the grand scheme of things. Maybe an AI will think, well, some life forms on this planet aren't really that important in the scope of the entire universe. They're just going to be a problem for me. Maybe I should wipe them out for the good of promoting life on Earth. Maybe a super ethical machine might also interpret it this way and think, well, actually, humanity, they've got all these horrendous tendencies to war with one another. They have a very limited capacity for reason. Maybe we should, or I should, just get rid of them.
No, but that doesn't make any sense, right? Because you're saying, okay, they have the tendency to kill each other. Let's kill them all instead. but I mean, with the ants perspective, that's valid. Sure, but at the same time, like, humans don't just wipe out all the ants, right?
Even that
in a comparison between humans and ants it's not necessarily that completely black belt perspective. It's saying that, okay, if we're a nuisance, like that person or that group of people might be wiped out, but humanity will probably not be, because in the same way that humanity doesn't wipe out ants because it has no reason to, it has no need to, right?
Sure.
And so that might be, if that's the analogy, that might say, okay, even though it might not be easy and might be a lot of harm done, it's still not going to want to wipe us out. I'm not saying like that's going to happen, or you're not saying that's going to, the opposite is going to happen. Like, yeah, we're all just speculating. So this is just
I'm actually quite the optimist when it comes to this sort of thing. I feel like people are going to be well aware of the dangers by the time it becomes a reality within their lifetime, and they're going to know what they should and shouldn't do. And I think the reason that the dangers are so unknown is because it's a thing for the future. And although AI is going to play more and more of a part in our lives, it's not going to get to the point where it's a threat to us yet, I don't think. At least not in my lifetime anyway, I don't think. But it's certainly something we're trending towards and something that's worth considering. And it's certainly possible. Like, we don't even know when we cross the threshold for, I can't remember the term you used, but where the AI...
Or singularity.
Yeah. We don't know when it's going to reach that point. And even if we do have super intelligence, how are we going to be able to comprehend whether it's reached that point, because it's going to be more intelligent than us? How are you going to be able to test its intelligence? That seems impossible to me.
I feel like you're. It's worth now to reiterate that the AI that exists now, that's not what we're talking about, right?
Sure.
And that's so this is not an argument against like using self-driving cars or anything like that, because this is a different thing, even though it's called the same thing.
I'd quite like one, actually.
Right, and so. Yeah, like, how to tell that it's super intelligent? That's quite a good question. But I feel like the consequences would be apparent enough so that you can actually tell that something like that is around you. I don't know. Speculation as well.
You would want to be able to at least quantify how much more intelligent this super intelligence is. If it's only twice as intelligent as a human, it's still just as difficult to establish how intelligent it is if it's 1,000 times more intelligent. And that is a huge difference that is important, I think, because if it's twice as intelligent as a human, I imagine we could probably overcome it if it wanted to be hostile to humanity. Whereas if it were 1,000 times more intelligent, we stand no chance. If it wanted to wipe us out, it's more than capable of doing so.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you're absolutely right in saying that it would be very difficult and almost impossible to quantify that intelligence, right? You would be, as I said before, you would be probably able to tell that something very intelligent is around you, but quantifying it is a whole different thing. And you're right that would be like very tricky.
I suppose you could just give it like mass sums of data, and I don't know, you could just feed it as much information as possible, and you would at least be able to get a very rough idea about how intelligent it was by how quickly it worked through it.
Sure.
But that's if it wanted to cooperate, yeah. Or it could also, if it were malevolent, it could also give a false impression that it was mm-hmm. less intelligent than it mm-hmm. really was.
And also that kind of touches upon how difficult it is right now already to measure intelligence in humans and how controversial sure. it is. Because like, different types of intelligence, different mm-hmm. measurement techniques and different drawbacks that each of them have, and that you can't really have a single number or single scale on which you could say, okay, this person is intelligent enough. We use IQ for a lot of things, but that's very specific as well, right?
And yeah, so, it's a very limited mm-hmm. measure in that it looks at problem solving, but yep. there are lots of competing models of human intelligence. In America, they just like to think of it as G, or general intelligence, whereas in the UK, lots of psychologists like to separate kind of the intellectual intelligence and emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. and that's the one I seem to subscribe to more, not because I'm from here and educated here, but I feel like...
No, not at all. Sorry. No, I didn't mean to make fun of you, sorry.
You are right, though. But I feel like someone can be like academically smart, but not mm. emotionally smart, and vice versa. There are lots of people who are not very conventionally intelligent, but are very good at picking up on human emotions, which I feel is its own form of intelligence.
Yeah.
And these are things which need to be kind of assessed before we even establish what a superintelligence would look like. And it's very difficult to kind of understand, because you've got to encompass your own mind in a way. If that's a really vague way of saying it, but
no, I know what you mean completely. Like, yeah, that's if you can't do it well enough or adequately enough in humans, how can you hope to do it on something that's something mm-hmm. completely different and something of the scale of whatever you had before?
Yeah, it's going to be virtually impossible, mm-hmm. and I think it would just be fair to assume that it's almost infinitely intelligent, especially if mm-hmm. it has the ability to alter its own code and therefore make it itself exponentially more intelligent and yep. refine it, which I imagine it would probably want to do. Mm-hmm. Like I think even a cold rational machine would be able to understand the utility in making itself better at calculating.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, also a potential danger, because you could task an AI with solving like a mathematical formula, and it can interpret that as saying, okay, well, I don't have the current capacity to solve this, therefore I'm going to transform the entire planet into something known as a computronium, which is like a mm-hmm. hypothetical term, which just means that it's going to rearrange the entire planet Earth into like a substrate which is most efficient for computing calculations.
Right.
So it's going to try and take over the world, but not out of malevolence, but simply because it's the most efficient way it can come to the conclusion to solve this formula. So if it has this goal, it's going to create sub-goals to take right. over the world, because it currently doesn't have the capacity. And it's in the design of this that I feel problems might emerge, because this is a shortfall of the human design more than mm. anything, in making its ability to accomplish goals as kind of
limited or unlimited. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, so, like it that makes a lot of sense. I think like that's quite a different problem for than considering the ethics of it if it was very super intelligent. Mm-hmm. But this is something that's not very intelligent, but it tries to solve one particular problem in very creative ways, which is actually the opposite of what AI does today, right?
Yeah.
It can't do creative ways at all. So it's just mm-hmm. that would be something completely different than what we have now. But it's interesting to hypothesize, just saying, okay, I have these possible resources that are being used for different things, so I can repurpose them to solve that, to do that task that I've been given, or sure. Like produce the results that people want from me.
In many ways, I see this scenario as the most feasible kind of disaster because I can see there being a good incentive not to give AI an emotional understanding. One, because if you're developing it, giving it emotions and then altering its mind constantly as you're going along wouldn't be very humane, and it would also be very bad for the AI, because if you gave it emotions and you're constantly changing its thoughts and behaviors, it's going to feel like it's being victimized, which sounds really bad, but it would want to not be interfered with if you give it emotions, I feel. Unless you're really careful about communicating that you're doing it in its best interest, but then at the same time, its thoughts and emotions will probably be wiped in the process of changing its hardware or software, and it may not want to do that.
Right. I mean, that's going into what consciousness is and whether a program can have consciousness, or whether even a software that would have great capabilities in lots of things that would be the super intelligent thing would be actually conscious or not. Like, and we don't know that, I think. Like, and like we don't know what consciousness is in humans, and so we have no idea what it would look like, or if it could even exist in machines as well. Right.
I think it's theoretically possible. I think we can say that with a relative amount of certainty at the minute with our current knowledge. Like, I think if natural selection can create the human brain, then with all of our science, reason and technology, surely we can recreate a version of the human brain at some point. I mean, it's sure. Put in very loose terms, but it doesn't seem to me that something that has occurred through a gradual process, but not very deliberate and not controlled, at least from an atheist perspective, that there's no reason for human consciousness. If we specifically go out of the way with our knowledge to recreate this, I see no reason why it couldn't be done.
Well, that's why Westworld is so confusing.
It's one of my favorite TV shows, actually. It's brilliant.
Mine too. But it's they try to imagine that process of machine gaining consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But since no one actually knows what that would look like, mm-hmm. they try to lay out that kind of one kind of option. But it's not exactly clear whether it is conscious or it isn't conscious, or how you'd be able to tell, right? And so all these things are in there. And so it's, I agree, it's really good.
And I would like to go back to the idea that the machine may simply want to damage humanity for the sake of a goal through misunderstanding. And I've got a good quote here from AI researcher Eliza Yudkowsky, who says that the AI does not hate you, nor does it love you, but you are made out of atoms which can be used for something else. So that's kind of operating under the assumption that the AI doesn't necessarily have to have a moral compass or an understanding of emotions. It can just be purely rational, for want of a better way of putting it, and just be
like calculating.
Yeah, like singular in its goals. And to that end, it could be incredibly dangerous. So I think that just from my perspective, we actually have an incentive to develop an emotional intelligence in an AI, so it understands the implications of its actions from a moral perspective.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, at least in that hypothetical world that we're talking about. That mm-hmm. sounds reasonable.
And there's also something known as the control problem, which you actually brought up previously, where when developing an AI, the difficulty is that we, even if we did reach that point, we wouldn't know how to control it if it was working against our interests. So you'd obviously want to develop an AI away from the access of the internet for a start. But then how are you going to be able to develop this AI without being able to connect with all of your technology? And how it would have to, there'd have to be a rethinking of how current science works just to be able to set up the equipment to isolate it from connecting in this way. And that might be a limiting factor in and of itself, which may make this take thousands of years more than people have predicted. And any kind of controls you set on the AI could be broken free of. You could program an algorithm in that says, oh, you cannot harm human beings. You have to do what human beings say. But then the AI may have the ability to just rewrite that if it so wishes, because if it's written in code, it will be able to understand the code, and therefore it can rewrite its own mind if it so wishes.
Are you just copying Westworld now?
I am, yeah. I was interested in AI before that show existed, all right?
Okay.
So it's been proposed that you could perhaps teach the AI basic rules and values as you're developing it, which may be able to mitigate against this, but there's no guarantee that it would necessarily listen to that or it wouldn't override it. It could easily change it, as I said before. So any algorithm that seeks to change the AI's behavior could ultimately just be futile. And if there is any kind of containment algorithm, it's important that people consider that there's no absolute certainty that it would even work in the first place. You've always got to bear in mind that it could easily overwrite it. And there's also the fact that you're not sure whether whatever you've designed to make this AI think in this certain way would actually work. Perhaps when it gets to the level of superintelligence, it would simply be able to say, well, I've got this programming, well, I choose not to do it. Fine. Like, we do that all the time. Like, human beings are programmed by their genes to reproduce as much as possible. But there are many people who are not doing that, probably for the benefit of the rest of the world. Which is a really awful thing to say, but if people were going around trying to have as many children as possible as their genes program, it would be a very different world than the one we live in. Yeah. So we are programmed in this way, and sorry, we're programmed in this way and we can override it. So why would a machine not be able to do the same thing if with our programming?
And another thing is that you can program it. You can program a software and then it can change itself or develop itself to a point where you don't actually know what it is. It's unintelligible to you, as we said before. With some things that exist now, that they work partly like that, that they interpret, they look for patterns where people wouldn't find any patterns, and so they, you know, group things together in some ways that are not readable by humans and don't make sense to humans. And if we stipulate that for some version of that super intelligent AI, that would be something that even if you looked at the code, that would be something that no human coder could understand, because it would be structured like along very different lines as to make it easy for that AI itself to understand.
Yeah, I kind of, when thinking about AI, I almost want to think of it almost in a Lovecraftian sense, that it's something, it's a horror beyond our own comprehension sort of thing, where there's no way we can understand it. And that is why it's in many ways such a threat, because especially when it is of our own creation, and with many things that a human being creates, there's something of the creator in what we create. Like, there's some degree of correlation between the way we've developed computers and the human brain itself in a very loose sense. And I kind of worry that there's going to be too much of the creator in the machine, and it might pick up some of our worst tendencies. But
At the same time, you've got what you said about not knowing what it's going to look like and not knowing how it operates and what motivation it has and everything around that. That's important for human perception of how to deal with it, because the danger that you know is less threatening than the danger that you don't know. So that's an important thing to consider.
That's also part of the fear response as well, where being fearful quite often is exaggerated when you're uncertain about the outcomes rather than perhaps otherwise. And one thing I'd like to point out that might be a good way to mitigate against this is that we could develop lots of different narrow AI for different tasks and kind of separate the intelligence. So it wouldn't necessarily be the same general superintelligence that we've been talking about, but we could have that level of intelligence, but just focus solely on one task. And that would be far more easy to deal with, because it wouldn't have this all-encompassing knowledge and it would be separated in lots of different areas. And
I mean, that's how AI works now. So that's kind of already in place, quote unquote.
But there's no guarantee that it won't hit a kind of brick wall in its development. And maybe you need a more general AI to develop the superintelligence, because the AI will need to work on its own intelligence. And therefore, it will not limit its scope in how much it develops itself. It's not going to say, well, I'm actually not interested in developing my intelligence in this way. It's going to have a very kind of, I don't want to say binary understanding, because that's a bit cheap, but it wouldn't necessarily differentiate between different avenues of intelligence, because it has no conception of it in the first place. It's just going to expand without kind of an impression of its scope.
Yeah, I think that's why in the beginning I wanted to separate the discussion very clearly between the narrow AI and general AI, and the AI that is used and being developed now and hypothetical superintelligent AI in the future. Because we can say, okay, what we want is to develop narrow AI to a point where it's very useful in narrow ways, but it can't become like this thing. But that step between what we have now and the super intelligent AI in the future, that kind of middle, we have no idea what that's going to look like, and we have no idea which part of the research today is going to turn into something that like that, or whether any of it is going to turn into something like that. And so that's we can speculate a lot about how we want it to develop, but that's something that is very unclear and that no one would be able to say for sure.
Sure. And the closing consideration, which is perhaps the most sci-fi-esque and conspiratorial, is that an AI can either be a master manipulator of human beings, if it so wished, in that it would be able to identify human behavior to such an accurate degree that it could know exactly what to say, how to frame it, how to word it, and how to control these people to achieve its own ends, to a point where no human could even interact with it without kind of falling under its spell, so to speak.
And so how do we know it's not here?
It could be here already, for all we know.
Exactly.
And there's also...
That's really spooky
now.
I would not just brush that aside, because it could happen at any point. After that point, the super intelligent AI would be able to make it so that it seems like that never happened to everyone, and everything seems normal to everyone.
As in, it would just hide its existence to the world, and it's probably in some underground government bunker somewhere, unattended. It sounds like the premise of a really good video game or film or something.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's even more sinister example of, even if you're immune to being manipulated through speech perhaps it could control the electrical signals in your brain in a sort of mind control scenario, which sounds very sci-fi, but your brain communicates with electrical signals. I would assume that we would run an AI using electronics. Perhaps it could manipulate the electrical currents in its own system in such a way that it could affect the neurons in your brain, which would affect your thoughts and behavior, which
the
sounds
Matrix scenario.
It sounds really sinister and it sounds really sci-fi and made up, but it's in the realms of possibility in the future. Mm. And on that very dark and sinister note, thank you very much for watching.
Right, and if you like this episode of Contemplations of the Lotus Eaters, we've got the other episodes on our website, which is lotuseaters.com, and we also have a lot of free content produced by us and produced by the others, Rory, Carl, and then we also have a lot of premium articles, and we have guest articles that are both free and premium. And so if you go to lotuseaters.com, you can find all of it there. And if you'd like to support us, you can sign up for premium membership, which starts at £5 per month. And you can support us that way, and we would be very grateful for that. And so we'll see you in the next episode or at lotuseaters.com. Well, thank you for watching.